From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? It is Tuesday, June 23rd, 2015, and you are tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on this lovely day. We've got a great show in store for you all. Of course, we are going to dive into the news surrounded by Pete Rose. Yeah, the Outside the Lines report, which new documents were obtained in a notebook that suggests that Rose actually bet on games as a player. We'll dissect what this means for Pete Rose and his baseball future, and whether or not this further hurts his case to be enshrined in the Baseball Hall of Fame. We'll also talk about an ESPN future power rankings report that actually ranks the U of M football team over and ahead of Michigan State's football team. Interesting stuff there. Also, charges have been dropped in the MSU softball investigation. We'll sum up that report. And also, I will be inviting right here in our WKAR studios Beth Trierweiler, who is a 5-year cancer survivor. She actually threw out the first pitch over the weekend at Cooley Law School Stadium before the start, of course, of a Lansing Lugnuts game. She'll talk about a pretty cool partnership between the American Cancer Society and the Lansing Lugnuts. All of that, as well as take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners again for this June 23rd. Prosecutors in both Ingham and Isabella counties announced on Monday that they won't press charges against Michigan State softball coaches Jackie Joseph and Jessica Bokrakis based on allegations they plotted to hit senior Alyssa McBride intentionally during batting practice before late-season games in Mount Pleasant and East Lansing. Now, Ingham County Assistant Prosecutor John DeWayne said in a statement, quote, "After this review, the prosecutor has decided not to press charges in this matter. As such, the matter is considered closed." We'll have more discussion on that in just a sec. Don't touch that dial. All right, Michigan actually ranks 15th in ESPN's latest future power rankings for college football, with Michigan State at number 18. Now, these are just projections. Michigan State has won 6 of the past 7 meetings between the two teams, or that MSU is coming off back-to-back top 5 finishes and major bowl victories. None of that really matters in this power ranking spiel. So we'll sum up that report and dive into the reasons that the report gives for ranking U of M over MSU. And sad news out of the wheelhouse of Central Michigan University. CMU Athletics announced last night, that football player Derek Nash, who was 20 years old, died after a second bout with leukemia. Nash was a standout running back at Carleton High and signed a national letter of intent with CMU in February of 2013. He was first diagnosed with leukemia 3 months later. He underwent chemotherapy that summer and fall, remained on the team and participated in spring practice in the spring game in 2014, but he learned that the leukemia had returned in the fall. So just sad news out of CMU. Thoughts and prayers to the school and team. All right, and due to inclement weather yesterday, was it ugly or what last night? The 26th annual Hall of Fame High School All-Star Softball game was postponed to a later date that has yet to be announced. Now, the doubleheader event was supposed to be held Monday night at Lansing's Rainey Park, which will feature 60 of the area's top senior softball players. Yoenis Cespedes launched a home run and drove in 3 runs to lead the Tigers to an 8-5 victory over the Cleveland Indians on Monday night at Progressive Field. With the victory, Detroit improved to 8-2 against Cleveland this year. David Price, who shut out the Indians a week and a half ago at Comerica Park, will get the ball on tonight's game 2 of the series, 7:10 p.m. Eastern Time, with a chance for Price's third complete game in 4 starts. All right, for 26 years, Pete Rose has kept to one story. He never bet on baseball while he was a player. Yes, he admitted in 2004, after almost 15 years of denials, that he had placed bets on baseball, but he insisted it was only as a manager. But new documents obtained by Outside the Lines on ESPN indicate that Rose bet extensively on baseball and on the Cincinnati Reds as he racked up the last hits of a record-smashing career in 1986. The documents go beyond the evidence presented in the 1989 doubt report that led to Rose's banishment and provide the first written record that Rose bet while he was still on the field. We'll have more on that story in just a sec. Darrell Hamilton, a standout center fielder and member of the New York Mets team that reached the 2000 World Series, was killed in a murder-suicide in a suburban Houston home, authorities said on Monday. He was 50 years old. Hamilton was found Sunday after he was fatally shot in a house in Pearland. He had worked for the MLB Network since 2013. And last but not least, the United States women's national soccer team topped Colombia 2-0 yesterday in the World Cup to advance to the quarterfinals, where it will face China on Friday. The U.S. led over Colombia 1-0 with roughly 40 minutes to play, and it added the dagger in the 66th minute. This time it was Megan Rapinoe who doing it as she drew another penalty kick for the U.S. instead of Amy Wambach. Carly Lloyd took the shot and buried it home. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. The number to call is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. If you want to weigh in on anything in the sporting world, anything that we discuss here on the show, you can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKR. Without further ado, it is about that time to start the show.
It's time to clean the slate. It's time to take responsibility. Knowing what I know today, I mean, I'm 14 years late.
14 years late in saying, yes, I did bet on baseball. Is it a sickness, Pete?
It can be.
I mean, there are gambling addicts.
Yes, but if you're addicted, how come you gotta stop? I don't think I ever gambled out of my means. You know, I didn't take the house payment money or the gas and electric bill money or that kind of money and gamble. That was a part of my life that you can't change. You wish it hadn't happened, but you can just guarantee yourself it won't happen again.
Oh, boy. And that is how we start today's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Hopefully you guys are having a beautiful, 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 beautiful day. New documents provide a vivid snapshot of how extensive Pete Rose's betting life was back in 1986. In the time covered in this notebook that has been found from March through to July of that year, Rose bet on at least one MLB team on 30 different days. It's impossible to really count the exact number of times he bet on baseball games, but not every day's entries are legible in the notebook. But on 21 of the days, it is clear that he bet on baseball. He gambled on the Reds. including on games in which he played. Never bet against the Reds, though. He didn't bet on the Reds to lose a game at all. Most bets, regardless of sport, were about $2,000. The largest single bet was actually $5,500 on the Boston Celtics, a bet in which he did lose. Rose bet heavily on college and professional basketball, losing $15,400 on one day. One day. Just imagine that, losing $15,400 in one day. That took place in March of that year. That came during his worst week of the four-month span, in which he lost a grand total in one week of $25,500. What you just heard was an interview that I remember vividly, watching the ABC Nightly News with one of my favorite journalists of all time, who is now retired, Charles Gibson. That aired on Primetime Thursday, on actually January 8th of 2004. And after denying it during that time for nearly 15 years, sports legend Pete Rose admitted that he bet on baseball and on his own team while managing the Cincinnati Reds, not as a player. And you just heard the thoughts that he gave on that during that montage, accompanied by, of course, one of my favorite tracks, Jimi Hendrix. Hey, Joe. Gotta love that. So this is really just taking over the world of sports and become really the prime conversation on headlines. I'll have to say probably the next headline next to that one, of course, is the appeal of Tom Brady for that four-game suspension on Deflategate, which we'll discuss later on in the show as well, and whether or not he should win that case and whether or not he will win that case. But let's deal with Rose for a sec. And the first thought that came to my mind when I read this report after we got off the air on Current Sports yesterday, and to analyze my emotion after reading the report, was I'm not surprised. Not surprised at all. This wasn't a breaking news to me. This wasn't new to me. It's new information, certainly. But it wasn't one of those moments that said, oh, really? He did that too? I mean, he already admitted that he did bet on the Reds as a manager. It doesn't surprise me that they have new information and new evidence suggesting that he did it as a player. And, you know, it's so crazy because, you know, when I look back at that interview with Charles Gibson, and looking at how stone-faced Pete Rose was throughout that sit-down, a pretty lengthy sit-down, and how an individual can just sit up on national television, look at a journalist or anyone who's viewing it, and just lie, blatantly lie, knowing what took place and knowing the true answers to the questions that were being asked by Charles Gibson, and just sit there and just say, nope, I bet as a manager, never as a player. You know what you did, Pete. Come on, Pete. And, you know, the reason why I chose that particular snippet to play out of the, you know, how I don't know how long that that entire sit down was. I mean, when I looked online, it was 30 minutes at that. And I chose that particular snippet because if you can hear Charles Gibson say, is it a sickness? And then Pete went on to say, of course, it can be. And that's exactly what it was. It's a disease. Pete Rose had, who knows, he may still have a disease. I don't know if he's betting now as we speak. I don't think he is. I would assume not. But he had a disease, folks. It's one of those things. I don't know if you guys know anyone who has battled through an addiction of some sort, whether it be alcohol or maybe it was betting. Maybe you saw somebody go through that period. But it's one of those things that it's tough to snap, you know, so much so that they even have hotlines out there that if you are addicted to it, you know, hey, call this hotline and we'll try to mentor you through this whole thing to get you over it. Pete Rose had a disease, folks. Anytime you blow over $25,000 in one week, anytime you blow over $5,000 in one day, something's wrong with you. something is wrong with you. And the reason why, when stepping back and sort of just thinking about Pete Rose's mindset, the reason why Pete Rose thought he could cover it up and the reason why he didn't come out and admit that, yeah, as a player, I also bet on games too, was that, folks, they didn't have evidence of it. The only evidence of it was in the notebook of Pete Rose's associate, Michael Bartolini. That's it. Once they couldn't obtain that notebook, you know what Pete said? Oh, well, you guys will never find this, so I'm just going to deny it. But I tell you what's done in the dark will always come to light. And just doing a random search of Bertoli's house, they actually found this notebook. ESPN's Outside the Lines got their hands on it, and boom, there goes the dynamite. Report is put together. You can actually see the handwriting of Michael Bertoli. You can actually see the bets that took place. Interesting stuff. I'm looking at a picture right now from the report. Here's an example. Wednesday, April 30th, 1986. I'm not sure what sport this is. I'm assuming basketball because it has Lakers on the other side. I guess the Dallas Mavs were taking on the L.A. Lakers at the time, and Pete decided to put a bet on Dallas. Then under that, it has Pete's name, and you have Dallas, and it has the Phillies underneath that, and then the Cubs. And then it has Bertoli's bets, Lakers, the San Francisco Giants, I'm assuming, and the New York Yankees. So just real vivid stuff that's just out there. I don't understand how Bertoli just kept his notebook around. I don't know for what purpose. I would have burned the thing if you asked me. But it's just an interesting conversation, though. And this is the big elephant in the room. Yeah, for me, it wasn't a surprise. I wasn't surprised that this new information came out about Pete Rose. Not at all. Again, he had a disease, folks. So it didn't surprise me that he was also doing this as a player. But this is the big question. And to be honest, for me, I think with this new revelation, for me, there's no way, no way, shape, or form that Pete Rose is getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame. No way. I mean, come on, folks. He's been banned for 20 years now from the game. And now with this information, because he still was protesting that, hey, all right, 20 years is long enough. Let me into the Hall of Fame now. What's going on here? But now this information comes out that he was betting as a player as well, and he withheld information. This new information gives ammunition for individuals who have always been against Pete Rose being a Hall of Famer. It gives that information and kind of fuels that now to really just put the nail in the coffin that it's done. Pete Rose won't be a Hall of Famer, folks. When looking at this information, does he deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? I may ruffle some feathers with this one, but I do think that Pete Rose deserves a spot in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Disagree? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Again, folks, we are taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. I'm going to back up my point here. The reason why I think Pete deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, first off, Pete Rose never cheated within the game. Never cheated within the game, folks. And what I mean by that is, I mean, we've seen the countless reports over time. You know, you can bring up countless names like Barry Bonds and, you know, what, Mark McGwire and Alex Rodriguez, who is the clear villain in today's game. We've seen those individuals get caught for using steroids. Steroids physically enhance you. It helps your size, your strength, muscle. That directly affects the game itself. Directly affects it. Makes you a better ball player. Also, when looking at the best with Pete Rose, but first off, Pete Rose never took steroids. He did it the natural way. It's a reason why they call him Charlie Hustle, folks. I mean, he was unbelievable. Everyone who's just a casual sports fan of the game of baseball. And if you just look at, and if you haven't seen footage, you know, for the younger generation that hasn't seen footage of Pete Rose play or really don't know about his accomplishments in the game, let me enlighten you real quick here, folks. And again, this is all natural. Pete Rose has never been caught using steroids here. Just looking at his major league records. Most career hits at 4,256. Most games played at 3,562. Most at-bats at 14,053. Most singles at 3,315. Most seasons with 200 or more hits at 10. Most seasons at 600 or more at-bats at 17. I mean, I could go on and on. There's about five or six that I'm not even mentioning here right now. National League records. Most doubles at 746. The 1973 National League MVP. 17-time All-Star at not one, not two, not three, not four, but five different positions. Folks, and again, I could go on and on and on when you talk about those league records as well. Pete Rose played the game of baseball the right way. What he did away from the game with Michael Bertolini was not right, and it was certainly against the rules. But Pete Rose brought interest to the game, and he broke records that we have not seen even equaled by many players who have played in Major League Baseball. That's why Pete Rose deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And for those that don't think he does because of this quote-unquote new revelation, I beg to argue with you. Because some of those same individuals are those that are vying for guys like Barry Bonds and guys like Alex Rodriguez and so on and so forth who have used steroids to also be in the Hall of Fame. Guys who clearly were who are affected physically to enhance their abilities on the field. Pete Rose did it the natural way, folks. And if you're going to go against Pete Rose for not being in the Hall of Fame, but vie for guys who have used steroids and clearly juiced to be in the Hall of Fame, you got your priorities mixed up. I want to invite now the man behind the glass, Isaac Constance, to Current Sports, our fantastic engineer of the show. Isaac, my man, how you doing, brother?
Doing well, Al. This is the weather that I was promised when they said I'd be up here for Michigan summers.
You know, you go. It's 65 gorgeous.
65 and sunny.
It's gorgeous, isn't it? I mean, it's just, I woke up this morning with just, I always do though. I wake up with a smile on my face, in a good mood. The birds were chirping. The grass is green. Oh, especially after looking after last night. I mean, my dog, I have a small little Morky. And, you know, she heard the thunder and the rain outside. I mean, she was crying all night, man. She has never experienced anything like that. I mean, we want to give thoughts to all those, especially in Portland, Michigan. I mean, I believe a tornado actually went through Portland, Michigan, and did a lot of damage to a few homes and churches as well. Really a bad night in mid-Michigan weather-wise.
Yeah, it was. But, yeah, on to the Pete Rose story.
Yeah.
You know, Pete Rose, I can't vote for him in the Baseball Hall of Fame. But here's the thing. He didn't have my vote before. I think when you set an example like that for the young players and young kids who are aspiring to be professional baseball players, you can't gamble as a player or as a coach. I don't think you can take steroids either. No steroid user would ever have my vote for a Baseball Hall of Fame.
The reason why I say that Pete Rose and even steroid users like Alex Rodriguez, Barry Bonds, you know, Mark McGwire, the reason why I believe that those guys deserve to be in the Hall of Fame is because they set and made their stamp on the game in a way that drove in hundreds of thousands of dollars for the game of baseball. That I remember in the 90s, you know, being a 7 and 8 year old kid watching the home run race between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire. A kid I grew up, didn't even really watch baseball like that. Even my dad never watched baseball like that. But when that was happening, we sat down that year and watched a ton of Cardinals and Cubs games just to see what was going to go on. It helped. It made, you can't ignore the impact that those individuals had. And the fact that they did have that impact alone gives them a right to be somewhere in the Hall of Fame of baseball. Now, I always said, if you're going to bring him in there, why not expose him at the same time? Yeah, they did this, and that greatly affected our game in a positive way. But he also used steroids. Put an asterisk next to it. He also did steroids. He did this. He did that. He did that. Expose him. When you put him in there, it's not all kicks and giggles. But you got to put him in there just because of the impact that they made. I get where you're coming from, though, because there's a lot of people that have that same stance, Isaac. That same stance. If you cheat, you do not deserve to be in. But if you're going to say that, okay, football, for example. Tom Brady, a proven winner. He got caught with this whole Deflategate thing. Does he deserve to be in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, he does. But then it's how can you make that a little bit different.
How is it different, Isaac? Explain.
Okay, because Tom Brady, although that was Deflategate, it's not like he took performance-enhancing steroids or anything like that. Tom Brady, okay.
But he cheated, right?
I am not a Tom Brady fan, but it was one game where it did not affect the outcome of the game. One game. That's different than affecting your whole resume as a player.
Well, Isaac, when talking about Pete Rose never affected the things that he did away from the field never affected the outcome of the game. He never bet against the Reds. There is no evidence of him directly affecting a specific change in the game to sway a certain way. He played the game hard, and he went out there every single time at bat to win as a player and as a player manager.
But don't you think Pete Rose's downfalls and missteps overshadow what he did for the good of the game? Whereas Tom Brady, I'd argue it's the other way around.
But why is that? That's not his fault, though. That's the media's fault.
That's public perception.
Yeah, that's public
perception. I think you're setting a bad example if you say, you know, yes, a player that did this much wrong gets to be in the Hall of Fame. But I don't think Tom Brady's done that much wrong.
Well, that could also vary from person to person, because there are individuals out there that just do not like the Patriots, do not like Tom Brady, that says, okay, you cheated? That's it. So, hey, what do you think? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, we are taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. Before we hit our first break, folks, I wanted to share this story because I found it comical. Very, very comical. Let's get away from the serious talk just for a second with Pete Rose. And, I had to read this story actually twice when I saw it. My frat brother, I want to give a shout out to my frat brother, Maurice. Mo sent me this right after I got off the air, after he finished listening to the show yesterday. And his jaw hit the floor. And so did mine, but I also kind of laughed at it as well. And, you know, every once in a while, well, more than once in a while, folks, let's be honest here, in the world of journalism, in the world of sports talk and sports debates, every once in a while you'll see, as I just stated, more than once in a while, you'll see an article just meant to spark up some discussion. Or to add some fuel to the fire and to really get some sort of debate going, right? And some journalists just do it to spark up, you know, some internet hits for their respective stories. That happens. That does happen, I will say. What I'm referring to is ESPN and their rankings of, latest revelation of, quote unquote, their future college football power rankings. Interesting stuff, folks, because you guys know Michigan State football has completely dominated the U of M football program for the past, we're talking like 6-7 years now, right? But ESPN's panel of college football writers sees that changing over the next few years. Actually, Michigan is ranked 15th in ESPN's latest future power rankings for college football, with Michigan State sitting at number 18. Oh, boy. And I really think this story is driven, and I think ESPN is just kind of hopping on the hype machine and the hype train that is Jim Harbaugh. Again, folks, he's been on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You've seen the videos of him, you know, going to different satellite camps and just trying to get that recruiting edge and playing football with his shirt off, doing a great job at branding the U of M football program. They're getting a lot of attention. I just think that ESPN is just kind of hyping on that train. And you know, we all know that Jim Harbaugh, he's a heck of a coach, but he has yet to coach a full Michigan football game on the sidelines at the Big House. And already, looking at what Michigan State has done, especially in the past 2 years, two top five finishes in college football, a win at the Rose Bowl, Cotton Bowl. I mean, come on. I find it comical. I'm not really taking it personal because I know the sports talk world we live in, and I know this article is just one that really was written to get a reaction. Maybe it was a slow day in sports. Hey, let's just throw out some future power rankings like somebody can really predict the future, right? Comical. It was. That's the mood I got from reading this article. Isaac.
Out. ESPN is the conductor of the Jim Harbaugh train. Not even they're not even riding on it because Jim Harbaugh, he just has his name on it. He has not done a thing yet. He's done a little bit of recruiting, and he's done a good job with it. Mm-hmm. But hasn't coached a game, barely coached practice, and yet Michigan is ahead of Michigan State in the future power rankings. What's that future based on? Because MSU is also ahead of U of M in all of the future recruiting classes. That's what the future is to me. It's fair to judge future recruiting classes, but future power rankings that don't take into account recruiting or recent success, that what's the criteria?
Exactly. And they don't back up their point at all. I want to read this, and then we'll throw to our first break here. And when we come back, we have a fantastic interview that you do not want to miss. Let me just read this as we throw the break here. This is how ESPN writer Adam Rittenberg backs up his point. He says he really states the obvious. If the Wolverines improve certain areas, they're going to have a chance to compete with Michigan State and Ohio State. That's telling me no new information. And then he goes on to say the offensive line has to get better. Duh. If that's one place where you can see progress, they'll be on a better course in the following 2 years. Duh. Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Yeah.
This is our second break, man. Oh, I'm done with this story. I don't even think we should waste our breath more on this story. When we come back, folks, you do not want to miss this interview. She's actually just walked in our WKAR radio studios. She's a 5-year cancer survivor. Wow. You do not want to miss our chat, folks. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 87. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. You are tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on this lovely Tuesday, June 23rd, 2015. I want to remind you all that, hey, Current Sports TV, we do tape tomorrow at 3 p.m. Of course, for the spring and summer months, we have moved up our Wednesday tapings from 6 p.m. to 3 p.m., and I have the privilege of sitting down for the first time. I think really the first time we've had him on our Current Sports airwaves. The head coach of the Michigan State women's soccer team, Tom Saxton. Of course, I'm going to pick Tom's brain apart, of course, on the Women's World Cup, which is taking place right now. Isaac, I know you're a big soccer buff, man. What'd you think of the U.S. women topping Colombia yesterday? They kind of struggled. It was like zip to zip at halftime.
I was surprised that it took so long for the U.S. to get going because, of course, we know from the last World Cup and recent results, the U.S. women's team is at the pinnacle of women's soccer. They're the best team in the world. And, yeah, I think they'll go far. I think it was just a bump in the road for that first half. But I think now they've got the gears grinding and they're ready to go.
All right. So, again, they take on China, I believe, on Friday. So we'll see how they bid on that game. All right, folks. Well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Folks, cancer survivors and their families recently teamed up with the Lansing Lugnuts at Cooley Law School Stadium to make investment in life-saving cancer research a top national priority. Now, the event is one of dozens nationwide where minor league baseball teams are teaming up with the American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network, and Fans for the Cure as part of the One Degree campaign to help save more lives from cancer. Now, the One Degree campaign has been championed by Hollywood and Nash and local celebrities together with grassroots advocates from across the country to ask Congress to increase medical research funding. I mean, we'll get into the logistics of that in just a sec. Now, Beth Treweiler, a 5-year cancer survivor. How about that? And also ACS and CAN volunteer from Portland. She actually threw out the first pitch at the game this past weekend and joined other volunteers in sharing the importance of the One Degree campaign with Lugnuts fans. Beth, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for allowing me to come here. I'm very appreciative for this opportunity.
Well, we appreciate you to come. It's an honor. Now, first off, Beth, before we get into the logistics of what took place this past weekend and, of course, the partnership between the Lansing Lugnuts and the American Cancer Society, I want to talk about your cancer story. Where were you and how did you get the news that you were first diagnosed?
I had salivary gland cancer, parotid gland cancer is the more technical name of it. And there was a lump behind my ear. I went to my primary care physician. He said, oh, it's just an infection from wearing earrings. I didn't like that answer. I had had issues with my ears my whole life, but never a lump before. Right. I asked another healthcare professional. I think he's right. I was under the care of an ears, nose, and throat doctor also, and I go there annually for thyroid checks. I had him take a look at it, and he said right away, he said, that is a mass. I got a biopsy that day, and a week later, I was diagnosed with cancer.
What went through your head when you officially got diagnosed?
It's always scary. You never know. It's important to be calm and patient and wait to hear what the professionals have to say. It matters what the staging is, what your prognosis is. My prognosis was good all along. My cancer was stage 0, but it was very aggressive. So I did win 30 radiation treatments. And I say win because I didn't have to go to chemo. I'm here alive today to tell my story. So it's really important to just stay calm, get informed, stay off the internet. Listen to your healthcare providers. They're the ones that are going to lead your journey.
You say stay off the internet.
Stay off the internet.
Why is that?
There's too many what ifs. There's too many scares out there. Your health professional team are really the ones that are going to treat you through this. They're the ones that you need to listen to and take their advice.
I want to talk about your family and those surrounded by you once you got this news. I mean, what was their reaction and what was their support like going through this thing?
You know, I come from a very small community. Everybody knew my family, my friends. They're 100% of the way. If ever I needed anything, they were there. Just a large amount of outreach. I was very appreciative of that. And it's very important in a cancer person's journey. The one thing I do want to talk about is how to treat a cancer patient. Once you find out somebody is diagnosed, treat them normally. Don't look at them and say, how are you feeling? And don't assume that because they don't look good that they're feeling bad. Every cancer survivor just wants to be treated normally.
Yeah, and you talk about when you go through the treatment process. Mm-hmm. You said you went through 30
radiation treatments. It took me longer to drive to the treatment than it did to actually have the treatment performed.
Okay, how was the treatment? If you could kind of take me through that.
Well, because mine was a head cancer, you have to go in and have some prep work done. I had a mesh screen that had to be form fitted, and that's what they strapped me onto the treatment, the radiation machine with. And it's very important that you don't move during that. Now, my type of radiation was like a CT scan.
Okay.
So for about 10 minutes, I would sit there and receive the radiation treatment and 30 of them. And it's much like receiving a burn.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
So is it painful?
It's not painful till towards the end when you, I developed like a large heavy sunburn, mm-hmm. blistering, scarring afterwards and that. I did have surgery. I had the cancer removed. All my lymph nodes were clear. So I was very lucky and very fortunate.
Oh, that is fantastic. So they caught it at the right time then?
Yes. Yes.
Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are talking with Beth Treweiler, who is a 5-year cancer survivor. Now, you know, Beth, you know, reading your story, quite interesting when I got this release and I said, oh, man, we got to get Beth on to talk about this. You mentioned in one quote how advances in cancer research really helped you out in battling this thing and fighting it. Can you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. Unfortunately and fortunately, I had a coworker that had the same type of cancer before I did 5 years prior. Mm-hmm. She had the same course of treatment. I stayed here locally in Lansing and met with our wonderful healthcare system here to get my treatment. She went to Ann Arbor, to U of M. She needed drivers regularly. She was very tired, exhausted, and she was on some pretty high painkillers when she got done. Over the course of that 5 years, research allowed treatment options to change. I went to work every day.
You did?
I drove myself to work every day.
Wow. Going through the treatments.
Through the treatment, except it was through the winter, so if it was really snowy or we had a blizzard, or I had somebody else drive me.
Okay.
So, I went to work every day. I did take a long weekend at the end because I was very sore, very tired, and I did not take any pain medication.
No pain medication at all. So was the pain bearable then?
It was bearable, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It was. Now, when looking at the American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network, Fans for the Cure, and the partnership, of course, with the Lansing Lugnuts. Mm-hmm. I mean, how big is that? How cool is that?
I was so honored to be asked to go and to throw out the first pitch. Because my journey is a little less invasive than most cancer patients go through, I forget I had cancer. But it's very important for me to be a volunteer, to do things like this. Research funding is so important in advances for cancer, and it's so beneficial to cancer patients and survivors.
Mm-hmm. How often do you talk to those who are in the midst of that battle of cancer right now? Do you talk to them a lot, and do you provide them with encouragement? Because that's kind of like a family. Whenever you go through something like that, I mean, it kind of creates a niche in a family that,
right,
you know, you always have a personal connection to, right?
Like I said, I come from a small community. We have a high rate of cancer in our community, and I don't reach out to strangers. Well, I've been active in Relay for Life,
right?
In addition to the Cancer Action Network, and people do come to me and ask questions. And again, I just give them support, listen to your medical folks, live as normal as possible. It's really important to have that support.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. All right, Beth, so you're asked to throw out the first pitch over the weekend. The weeks or days prior to, did you practice at all that first pitch? We've seen some bad bloopers on television. Talk about staying away from the internet, right? I mean, if you go on the internet right now, there are tons of bloopers and those who have failed at the miraculous first pitch, right? What did you do to prep for that?
I didn't prep at all.
Nice. Look at you.
I have a 7-year-old nephew and an 8-year-old niece that I've pitched to before. I thought that was sufficient enough, but unfortunately, it did not help my game on Sunday.
It didn't?
How did
it go? I mean, was it down the middle? Was it kind of to the right?
It was not down the middle. It was like down the left, and it just hit the dirt. And if I remember correctly, there was no catcher there. Had there been
a
catcher, I could be wrong. I might have just been nervous because of the crowd.
Okay.
But I don't remember there being an actual catcher with a glove there. And had there been, I think that would have made a big difference.
Oh, that's still a very, very cool honor, Beth. Now, looking at your journey these past 5 years, doing something like what you did over the weekend, can you talk about how really that kind of serves as a symbol of empowerment for you?
Oh, it does. I am very proud to be a cancer survivor. It's so empowering to see, and I'm one among millions of people now that are cancer survivors, and research has helped a lot of people be cancer survivors and live longer lives.
Exactly. Very, very true. So for those that want to donate, if we have some listeners out there that's saying, oh my goodness, I mean, this is a really cool partnership between the American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network, Fans for the Cure, and the Lugnuts. How can those out there donate and be a part of this?
Everything's available on the internet. We're always looking for volunteers. If you're very passionate about volunteering, volunteer your time. You don't always have to give money to volunteer or to donate. I got involved with the American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network. I was actually asked to be an ACT lead, which is a ambassador constituent team lead. Mm-hmm. And I am the lead staff for my voting district. And what we do is we go talk to legislature about important issues that pertain to cancer, even like e-cigarettes and cancer research. We're looking at colorectal cancer bills right now. We're looking at increasing funding. So it's something that I'm very passionate about. Cancer survivors telling their story to legislature, it really makes a difference.
That can be very persuasive, I'm sure,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Now, the advances in research, cancer research, since, you know, when you won your battle 5 years ago up until now, I mean, what sort of advances have been made in that short span of time?
Well, I don't know specifics because I'm not into the scientific piece of it.
Right,
but what
right.
I can share with you is that we've taken a drastic turn in funding for research in this country. And as the United States, I think that's a really really not a good position to be in. I mean, we are known for our power across the whole universe and the world. And for us to be not be at risk of no longer being the leaders of cancer research, I think that's a real threat to cancer patients all over.
Yeah, certainly. Again, folks, if you're just not tuning in, we are talking with Beth Treweiler, a 5-year cancer survivor from Portland, Michigan. Now, Beth, before we get off the airwaves, I love to do this because I remember when we had Gene Washington, famed Michigan State wide receiver, who also is a cancer survivor. We had him on the show. And anyone who has gone through some hardship concerning this heinous disease, I really believe that many of us here in America, we at least know or have been directly affected by this disease in some way, shape, or form, whether a family member has gone through it, a friend, something we've seen on TV. And for those out there listening, because me and myself, I mean, I always tell the story of how back in 2011, my grandfather, he passed away, sadly, due to prostate cancer. And watching him go through that was one of the most vivid memories, something I will never forget, and something that really touched my heart to bring a personal aspect to it when it concerns myself. For those out there listening that may be battling through cancer or know someone that is close to them, what message, what is it that you would want to say to them through these speakers?
Through these speakers that we just talked about?
Through the airwaves.
Well, what I'm here that I really want to talk about today is the One Degree Program. The One Degree Program is that collaboration between ACS CAN and Stand Up to Cancer. And what we're really, really hoping to do is to get that research funding increased. We're looking to, let me go back to this. We are all just one degree from cancer. Mm-hmm. Each of us has a relative, as you said, a friend, a coworker, someone who's battled the disease. Many have fought it ourselves. We're asking Congress to boost the federal investment in cancer research by $1 billion over 2 years. That's huge. Cancer strikes 1 in 2 men, 1 in 3 women in their lifetimes. It kills one person every minute of every day in this country. But thanks to innovative cancer treatments, therapies, nearly 15 million cancer survivors are living and they're thriving in America today. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. So what's happened with the funding? Our National Institute of Health and National Cancer Institute fund, the research, they fund our projects here in the labs nationwide.
Right.
Those include many areas in Michigan. We're talking Van Andel. We're talking here at MSU, University of Michigan, and Wayne State. These projects save lives, and they create jobs in our community as well. The funding today is well below where it was prior to the sequestration. I don't know if everyone's familiar with that, but that was the mandatory 5% decrease that all programs took at the national level.
Okay.
So the sequestration in 2013, without accounting for inflation, the budget has dropped 26% since 2003 for research funding in our country.
Oh, wow.
So we're trying to get it restored bit by bit.
Right.
And that's why we're asking for that $2 million today.
There you go. All right, folks. And again, we'll make sure to put that information on how they can do that on our Facebook page. Also, I'll tweet it out later on as well. Beth, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again, folks. Beth Treweiler, 5-year cancer survivor from Portland, Michigan. Again, folks, we'll be tweeting it out. We'll be putting it on our Facebook page on how you can get involved with the American Cancer Society as they have now linked up with the Lansing Lug Nuts. Pretty cool stuff. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, folks, we will put a bow on today's show with Top 5 Tuesday. Bring a sports twist to this conversation. We will entitle this Top 5 Tuesday, Fighting the Good Fight, the sports figures who have fought and battled the heinous disease of cancer. You don't want to miss that. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. Wow, was that a fantastic interview or what, huh? Man, Beth Treweiler, 5-year cancer survivor. Of course, the American Cancer Society has teamed up with the Lansing Lugnuts. Beth got the chance to throw out the first pitch over the weekend. Very, very cool stuff. I'm always nervous because if I ever get asked to throw out the first pitch, I've seen so many horror examples. Probably the one most notably, Isaac, have you seen the one with 50 Cent when he threw out the first pitch?
Oh,
the rapper?
Yeah.
That's pretty bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's horrible.
We've seen some bad ones over the years, so I'm sure Beth handled it like a pro over the weekend. But yeah, I always get nervous when thinking about that. Man, if I ever get asked, I'm going to make sure I practice like every single day leading up to it and then watch the day comes, right, and I throw it, you know, far left or far right. That'd be crazy stuff.
There's another top five topic for you.
I know, right? The worst first pitches of all time. That'd be fantastic. I'll pocket that one, right? No. And Beth is behind the glass actually pointing at herself. No, I'm pretty sure she did well. I want to see if anyone has video of her first pitch, actually, and maybe we can put it on Current Sports TV this week, right? She's like, no, don't do that. Folks, let's put a bow on the show, Isaac. Of course, each and every Tuesday, we love to bring you guys what we call Top 5 Tuesday, a top 5 sporting topic we've done, the top 5 point guards of all time, the top 5 moments of the MSU football regular season. We've done that before, folks, and today, of course, in homage to those who have battled cancer, the heinous disease over the years, or any disease in the world of sports, we wanted to bring that up because it's important to be reminded of fighting the good fight, if you will. So here we go, time for Top 5 Tuesday. All right, folks, it is time for Top 5 Tuesday, and this Tuesday, we center it on fighting the good fight, the sports figures who have battled heinous diseases. First off, Isaac, I know you have your own special list back there. You probably got 5 big, big names. I couldn't just choose 5. There are so many that have, battled battled something off the field or off the court or off the course. When Googling this whole thing and going through the list of just unbelievable names, I could not just limit mine. So I probably have about 7 or 8 that I may throw out there, maybe 10. So first off, you want to start this thing off for us?
That's just great because I have 7 as well.
You have 7? Okay, great. All right, we're on the same page.
Kind of broken up into sports and their categories. So number 5, I've got John Kruk and Eric Davis from baseball, of course. So 2 legends, all-stars, great players, and both battled their own forms of cancer and won. So yeah.
There you go. Love that. Love that. I'm going to start mine off with Muhammad Ali and his battle with Parkinson's disease in 1984. Arguably the greatest boxer ever was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, a degenerative condition affecting the central nervous system. Despite his illness, Ali continues to remain as active as possible, actually lighting the torch, remember, at the 1996 Summer Olympics and attending President Obama's inauguration. He's also been a staunch activist for Parkinson's research, and established the Muhammad Ali Parkinson Center in 1997. Isaac?
Well, next I've got Mario Lemieux, of course, of the Pittsburgh Penguins, hockey legend, and he actually created, his own organization, the Mario Lemieux Foundation, and became one of the key contributors to Livestrong. So Mario Lemieux showing how to do it.
Great, great individual there to choose. All right, I'm going to actually go with a guy that a lot of people forget had to battle through cancer, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Do you remember that one, Isaac?
I did not.
Yes.
I'm a basketball historian, too. I didn't know that.
Exactly. Well, it wasn't too long ago. In November of 2009, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, one of the greatest ball players of all time, he announced he had leukemia, a slow-growing cancer of the white blood cells. The former Lakers center had been living with the disease for nearly a year before he decided to go public and become an advocate to raise awareness. So to my knowledge, I think Kareem is doing well. He's still alive and living. So to my knowledge, I think he's fighting and winning right now.
I actually saw him post on Facebook a couple of days ago a picture of himself for remembering the Charleston victim. So he does appear to be doing well, and he's as active as he ever was.
Right.
Number 3, I'm going to go off the board and go with this guy, Jonas Gutierrez, who's actually a soccer player, current soccer player, who played for Newcastle United and suffered through testicular cancer, missed a whole season, but ended up scoring the goal that kept Newcastle in the Premier League last season. Unfortunately, the story has a tragic ending in a little bit in that Newcastle actually cut him after the season, after he not only battled through cancer, but scored the goal that kept him in England's top flight. So a little bit of a sad ending, but he'll find another club and be all right.
There you go. And what would a list like this be without Arthur Ashe, huh? Arthur Ashe, considered one of the most influential athletes in history, the tennis great, broke the color barrier as the first Black player to win the U.S. Open and Wimbledon. His career ended when he was diagnosed with heart disease in 1980. The next year, he became chairman of the American Heart Association in 1992. Ashe announced that he had AIDS and used his fame to raise awareness and money for the disease. He died, sadly, in 1993 of AIDS-related pneumonia.
Yeah, that's incredible. Also, from our guest behind the glass, Shannon Miller, a former U.S. gymnast. And do you know what type of cancer she battled through? But, you know, the name's recognizable. I mean, certainly the name brought up to
Shannon
me.
So, Miller.
Yeah, Shannon Miller. She comes in at number two.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I just Googled her, man. She's pretty big, too. Oh, I have to do my own homework here. Thank you for that, Beth. Also, last but certainly not least, I got to bring up Pat Summitt and her battle with dementia. Before she became the most successful basketball coach in NCAA Division I history, Pat Summitt was a standout college hoops player and a member of the first medal-winning women's Olympic basketball team. Summitt has been battling arthritis for years, and in August of 2011, she announced that she had early-onset dementia. Summitt is determined to fight the disease, and she's really, I think, hung up the whistle, at least for coaching. But we wish her certainly the best. I'll post the rest of my list on my Twitter page and also my Facebook page. Final thoughts, Isaac. I want to quickly get your thoughts on this whole Tom Brady appeal as well. Tom Brady, of course, appealing the NFL's decision initially to suspend him 4 games due to Deflategate. Do you think that he will win his appeal and possibly get that suspension reduced?
I think he will win his appeal because usually those types of appeals work in the NFL. These guys, I mean, the court, it's about having a good lawyer. I guarantee you Tom Brady got himself a pretty good one.
And yeah, yeah.
Really quick, just top of my list, number one.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Lance Armstrong. I know he was stripped of all his Tour de France titles, and what he did after cycling was terrible, but he's done more for cancer than any athlete I can think of.
Unbelievable. He's an unbelievable guy, even though he also had his share of controversy away from what he did on a bike, okay? But again, I also agree with you. I think Tom Brady's going to win his appeal. I think he will be suspended from 4 games to 2 games. Well, fantastic show. I want to give a big thanks to Beth Treweiler, 5-year cancer survivor, who joined me live in today's studio to talk about her battle with cancer and also, the incredible things that the American Cancer Society is doing in partnership now with the Lansing Lugnuts. How about that? Again, folks, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to WKAR's Current Sports. To me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day. And be easy, people.